Hey guys, Gerald Peters. Thanks for listening to the Science of Getting Rich podcast. If you don't have a copy of my book, You Don't Have to Die Broke, it's completely free. Just get in touch with me by email, DM, whatever, and we'll get it to you. Hope you enjoy the podcast. All right. Sit down. One of the great things that I like, one of the things I love about the stock market. See, I have these two loves. I have these two things that pull against me. I'm a real estate investor, and I love doing that. But I'm also, a stock investor. And for me, there's just enormous similarities. Like, I don't understand the distinction or the confusion between the two, but, you know, everyone's got their thing. I just happen to be in love with two women. You know what I mean? And I appreciate the other's love for the other. My friends that are stock only and, you know, advocate for that. I appreciate that argument because I love the same thing. You know, it's like if you love football and you happen to love basketball and, you know, you're trying to pick, but maybe you played football, but you never played basketball and you still like it. And for me, you know, I've never owned a big business, but I'm fascinated by big business. So I invest in big business. And part of me invests in big business because I just expect it to have a better chance of surviving. That's why it got big, you know? So for me, investments into big companies is just, it's like a layup, you know? I mean, we want to have some way of checking their financials. I mean, and so one of the things that I do is I have a paid subscription to a company called Morningstar. And Morningstar rates stocks. I also, in all disclosure, subscribe to their dividend select portfolio. It's like a real money portfolio. They're using real money. And for years and years and years, it was run by a guy named Josh Peters, I think. Anyway, that's irrelevant. He's moved on and there's now a new fund manager. And of course, they have his bio on there, and then he buys stocks in a portfolio that are producing 4-5% cash flow, like money in your hand, but they're anticipated to grow by 10-20% a year. That's the goal. And so I like that. That's kind of my philosophy. And I do the same thing, and then I'm a believer in charts. I believe I can interpret price movement in charts. And it's not an infallible system, no more than playing blackjack is infallible, because we deal with uncertainties. We deal with an ever-changing world. There is no certain future, so we don't know the roll of the dice. But I understand the asset class, and I have a basic strategy. And so I use the charts to help me get a visual picture of price. And it's not a matter of day trading or moving in and out. I'm not doing any such things like that. It's just a matter of like timing my entries and maybe timing when I take a little money off the table to use in another investment. Listen, you know, no one's had more effect on entrepreneurship in America than probably Robert Kiyosaki and Gary Vaynerchuk in this modern era that we're in right now, like in the last 20 years. I think most people would agree with me. Gary Vaynerchuk, you know, you might could throw in Grant Cardone, but I think Grant Cardone does more to inspire people to invest in real estate or, you know, continue to do sales than to start their own businesses. But Gary and Robert put millions of people on that path to following their dreams, becoming a whatever. Well, Robert Kiyosaki's, he's against the stock market. And I've always felt like he did people a disservice. I mean, the stock market's gone up for 12 years. I don't understand the stance against it when you can just look at 100 years of history for it. I understand someone not liking it. I mean, I got a friend that owns 120 plus rental properties. You know, he's worth just millions and millions of dollars. You know, the portfolio's well over 10 million. I don't even know, right? How much is 120 something houses and commercial properties and apartment building. What is all that worth? I don't know. But he's not selling, so how much it's worth isn't as important as the cash flow. And when you manage something like that, I mean, your cash flows are, you know, closer to $100,000 than they are $50,000. You know, no matter where that portfolio is in America. And you know, that guy, he doesn't need stocks. He doesn't need stocks. But when you're Shanika or Jerry or Jose, and you don't make a lot of money, the reality that you're going to get into stocks is pretty low. It's not impossible. And I would encourage you to do it if you can figure it out. But in the meantime, you need to be saving and investing. And there's something that historically over the last 100 years has produced an average of like 10%. A guy DM'd me and said he's done 90-year historical and it gets up into 11%. The thing is though, 10% looks like 1 year negative 5, next year up 18%, next year down 6, next year up 27. And so there's volatility, and volatility scares people. And the reason it scares people is they just haven't studied or spent any time in history. Well, so we have Robert Kiyosaki and we have Gary Vaynerchuk influencing young entrepreneurs. Well, in the investing space, we have people like Warren Buffett. Nobody's probably done more to advocate for buy and hold investing in blue-collar, blue-chip stocks than Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. And if you don't know who Warren Buffett is, what planet are you from? And if you don't know who Charlie Munger is, you've done yourself a disservice. You need to Google Charlie Munger. He's like Warren Buffett's right-hand man. They're partners. And the funny thing is, he's not as rich as Warren. And the reason being is he began giving money away much sooner than Warren Buffett has. Warren Buffett's not much into giving money away. Matter of fact, his fund doesn't even pay a dividend. He keeps all the money because he says in there, listen, if you let me keep it, I can multiply it faster than you can. And so his wife was, as they were becoming richer and richer and richer, I think his wife was actually somewhat uncomfortable being so rich. And here's Warren, you know, worth all this money, still living in the same house in the same town, and he's worth billions of dollars. And she's like, hey, we need to start giving away some of this money. And he's like, well, that would be a misallocation of money. See, Warren isn't an investor. Warren is an allocator of capital. Warren's an entrepreneur. He's a savvy businessman. Except Warren's products, the products that he carries at his shop, are other people's labor. See, Warren is buying, first, a business. Second, something that produces a profit. And then he wants to buy it at a discount, right? And he wants a company that has somewhat of a moat, meaning there's not many people. You can't just run up in their business and compete. Say, take a business like Blue Apron. I mean, what if Warren Buffett wanted to create a company to compete with Blue Apron? What would stop him? Nothing. Or Shaving Club. What stops them? Nothing. But if you want to create an electric car, ask Elon Musk. It ain't that easy to compete against big business like Ford or General Motors, right? And so there's barriers to entry. You want to get started in real estate, there's barriers to entry. That's why I'm advocating blue-collar chip stocks, because it's a way to build wealth in route to that. So if you want to be a real estate investor, but you have small sums of money, you should be investing in the stock market. You don't have to leave it. Dude, I'm not advocating fucking retirement. You know, that's what I've told you. Retirement wasn't created for you. Retirement was an industry created to milk you. You think these people managing your money and running those 401ks know shit? Most of them don't know anything. Almost any good professional, like I know dozens of every average day, average people. I know dozens, just regular average people who smoke the returns of a 401k. I know guys that get 20, 30, 40%, 50% consistently all the time because they run a portfolio. Single family homes, some apartment buildings. They've got local tax-free municipal bonds. They buy land when it's dirt cheap. Like they're investors. They invest in all different asset classes all the time. They're always looking to, and that's what Warren Buffett does. Warren Buffett allocates capital. If he's got $1 million he's sitting there, he goes, okay, what can I do with this $1 million that'll one, produce cash flow? I want money, consistent money coming to me, money that I could pay a phone bill with. Money I could go on a vacation with, or money that I could compound. And so that's what Warren Buffett does. Warren Buffett is the ultimate market timer. Some of you know I have a book called The Money Flow. And in The Money Flow, I teach how I time the market. Now, it's important for you to understand, I don't think I'm Nostradamus. I don't think I know where the market's going to go. I have no fucking clue. If you ask me, hey, Gerald, where's the market going to be next month? I don't know. I'm just following the money flow. And so I have a series of three indicators, three moving averages, and a basic philosophy of how I analyze the market. And we combine these indicators with what stage is the market in, and we can make a logical guess for where we should allocate capital. Simple as that. And sometimes we own a business, we're happy with the business, it pays me a stream of income I'm happy with. Let's say I got 1,000 shares of AT&T. Every time they pay a dividend, right, I get $512. I'm good with that. I'm good with that income stream. I don't need to worry about the ups and downs of AT&T. That's a core holding. You get what I'm saying? Okay, price changed a little. Is my dividend any different? No, still going to get your 512. Cool. So I understand what it is I own. And one of the core messages that Warren Buffett teaches is you should only ever be able to buy 12. That imagine if at age 18 you had to pick one car and this would be the only car you would own for the rest of your life. Well, it wouldn't take long before people got hip to this and saw so many people regretting the car they picked that all of a sudden this would become a concern. People would begin to study and to think, geez, what car should I get? It's the only car that I could ever get. Now let's pretend like you're only going to buy a couple asset classes, and within that asset class, you're only going to buy a limited number of assets, and those assets are going to provide for you for the rest of your life. It's not about picking a magic asset that goes from zero to a bazillion. It's about accumulating solid assets. They're going to continue to pay you money consistently. That's what it's about. We want big companies that have survived up and downs. We want to buy them though when they're on a discount. And often if they're on a discount, they have troubles. It's what Warren Buffett does. You think Warren Buffett steps in and buys companies that are overpriced? And he may mess up. And he has messed up. He got his ass handed to him in his recent investment with Kraft Heinz. They got it totally wrong. Guess what? I've got it totally wrong. But guess what? He still owns it. And guess what? Kraft Heinz has started to move back up. So what could Warren Buffett have done? Well, in the last few weeks, he could have bought more of Kraft, and it wouldn't surprise me if we found out that he did. And guess what? The more that he bought down here in these cheaper prices where it appeared he was wrong, what? Those investments begin, they have a different return than the ones he bought higher, right? And so people get this idea of, sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll say, well, I've lost $500. Let's say they put $5,000 into a stock and the entire market starts to go down, or this company keeps going down and they're down $500. And they may say, well, I've lost $500. And dude, you haven't lost anything. They're still paying you the income stream that you bought. That's what you invested in. You invested into money, into making money. The temporary price by the market, the price of the up and down of the day-to-day of what that asset could sell for is not relevant today. But over time, it is relevant. And over time, you will have more of the asset simply from compounding the money that was given to you. But often, even if you don't compound, if you are strategically trying to buy these assets at a discount, 20%, 30% below book value, not book value. Book value is a different calculation, but below market cap, like you can make a decent case that, hey, this stock doesn't have to be way undervalued. It's just undervalued. You understand the business. You understand how they make money. You understand the dividend. You've looked at the dividend ratio. You can say, okay, I can expect this income stream and I anticipate it's going to do this. So then we go to a chart and we begin to pinpoint our entries. You don't think Warren Buffett pinpoints his entries? You don't think Warren Buffett's a market timer? Are you crazy? You know how many times he's bailed out people like Lehman or Bank of America and get sweetheart deals? He loaned Goldman Sachs money in exchange. They gave him stocks. They gave him stock options. They gave him guaranteed interest rate returns. He does this all the time, dude. He's one of the ultimate market timers. But he doesn't have to have the exact price and time. Why? Because he's trading for all time. right? All time. So in my book, I talk about figuring out what stage a stock is in. I can just look at a chart and I can tell you, I don't even need to know what the business is. I just look at a daily chart and I go, okay, this stock is in a stage one accumulation phase where it just moves sideways and people are just slowly accumulating shares, trading shares back and forth, no big deal. And all of a sudden we have a breakout where price takes off, closes above the average price of the last 20 days. Ooh, that's big math, huh? Can you count 20 days on your fingers, 1 to 20? Yep, you could add up the price each day, divide by 20. Isn't that how you get an average? If you sell 20 things and all 20 sell at a different price, we could figure out an average price point, right? Well, we can do that too with stocks. But here's the beautiful thing. It's done for you on a computer. There's a picture. And then we can plot that average. We could say, let me see a visual representation of what the last 20 days looks like. Where's that? Now, if we look at that, and let's say we make that a line, and we make the color of that line green, we can look and see, is today's price above the green? And you say, well, what's the green? The green is the average price that it's traded each day, back and forth, selling back and forth, where it closed. We add them all up, we divide them by 20, and that's the average price, right? Well, where's price today in relation to the average? If it's above the average price of the last 20 days, would you say that price seems to be going up? In just a pure mathematical sense, if something costs more than it has over the average of the last 20 days, you look and you're like, wow, it's higher. You drove to the gas station and price is higher than it has been the last 20 days. You would say what? Price is higher. Well, it's going up. Now, what if you had a philosophy where you just assumed whatever direction something was going, it was just going to keep going that direction. So if it's moving up, you just assume it's going to keep going up until what? Until it doesn't. And what happens if it doesn't? Well, it puts in a lower day, right? Well, now we could begin to add up these lower days as price direction changes. All of a sudden, you're driving to the gas station and price is a little bit lower today. You notice the next day it's a little bit lower, and you notice the next day it's a little bit lower, and then maybe next day it's the same price, next day same price, next day same price. Oh, then it went up a little bit higher. Next day it's a little bit lower. We begin to plot this using a line. We all did this in eighth grade math. This is not complicated. And so we began to see, oh, price is below this. And so all of a sudden now you have a tool, you have a way of measuring the price volatility of the companies that you own stock in, right? And now if we have this data, if we have this information, what else could we do? We could begin to look for patterns. We could then make visual representation and say, hey, every time this stock is 10% below what I paid for it, buy me 10 more shares. Buy me 5 shares. Here's $300. Give me 10 more shares or 11 shares. You say, well, Gerald, that's not a lot of shares. I know, but I've been doing it for 18 years. And so for 18 years, following the U.S. stock market with my passion for looking and finding one or two good blue chip companies or income funds, or they're not all stocks. Some of them are income funds. Some of them are REITs. Whatever catches my fancy, whatever sector, whatever industry. Because see, I want to be like Warren Buffett. I want to allocate capital to people who need it because, well, price is wrong. Because I think people get it wrong. Remember when they said Donald Trump was going to lose? What happened? He won. It's very common for the crowd to be wrong. And so I want to buy when other people are selling. I want to sell when other people are buying. Why would I do this? Because Warren Buffett said to what? Be greedy when other people are fearful and be fearful when other people are greedy. I want to get on the other side. Well, in order to do that, I have to have some way of determining price. And so I began to break price up into one of four stages. Accumulation stage, obvious, going sideways. All of a sudden price begins to rise and closes above the 20 days of the average price of the last 20 days. What does that tell me? It tells me we have a breakout. I call that a breakout. I assume price is going to continue to break out, so I take on a position. And as price continues, now I should backtrack and say there is strategy for buying in the accumulation stage. If you are a long-term holder of this, that is the lowest price you're probably going to get, the accumulation stage. Remember, once we start accumulation stage, we just assume it continues to accumulate, so we don't have to worry, so we can start buying. All of this phase for my philosophy of how I buy and sell and move within stocks and create wealth for myself that now produces thousands of dollars a month in passive income through the form of dividends. I teach this in my free book, You Don't Have to Die Broke. There's an entire chapter on the dogs of the Tao. None of you listening to me right now have enough money to outdo that strategy, that strategy becomes old, that there's not enough opportunity for you in that strategy. This last week, I just purchased one called 3M. 3M, you know the company 3M. Ticker MMM, stage 2 breakout. We're already up a couple $100s. I am. I've done Kraft Heinz. That's why I brought that up in the example. We're currently long the gap. Now, my intention is never to sell these shares. I may reallocate capital based on what I'm seeing. So I also want you to know that in addition, that price can go too low, price can go too high. And that could let us know, hey, you might could get a better return on part of this capital, not all this capital, because we also are buying the income stream. But we might want to take some of that capital and reallocate it to better opportunities if you see them. If you don't see them, then don't worry about it. But I tend to always see them. Now, I trade this idea and this style within the context of a larger portfolio, trading about 42 different things within different sectors of the U.S. economy. And there's always something doing good and there's always something doing bad. And I'm able as an intelligent human being to make a rational decision over the income that my portfolio is receiving and the direction I think stocks are going up or down. And so I can reallocate capital. Now, here's the beautiful thing is I never fucking lose. I'm never wrong. Because I don't really care on a day-to-day price, day-to-day, what the price of the actual underlying asset is. What I'm buying is the yield, the income. So I'm looking for a stock, a fund, an ETF, an ETN that's priced undervalued price, that it's been hit in what's called a stage 4 decline and it's actually gone too far. How do I know it's gone too far? Well, I have an indicator that helps me. Is my indicator foolproof? No, not at all. Not at all. My indicator is not foolproof at all. But it is an indicator, and it does keep me going in the right direction. And here's what it does do. It's right a whole lot of the time. And so I'm able to move in and out, allocating capital as I see fit. I don't have to do it. This is just structure. It just gives the game structure for me. It allows me to know when's a good time to buy and when's not a good time to buy. And I don't necessarily have to respond. I'm in control. Just like Warren Buffett. He talks about this strategy that he watches 1,000 pitches and then he takes one. And he says the beautiful thing about his game, unlike baseball, is he never strikes out. Because if you get it wrong, you just take a little bit of a loss, you could liquidate, and you move on. But this isn't about that. This is about building a portfolio that builds wealth throughout your life and then is passed forth as legacy. It's not about getting rich quick. It's about building real wealth that pays you money every single month, different companies, depositing real money into your checking account, irregardless of what you do for a living. I'm not talking about you changing your career. I'm talking about you taking the money that you, your wife, your boyfriend, and the people in you love, the people in your household, and taking part of that money and using it to create and to build wealth. Now, if you're like me, I took a whole lot parts of it. My investment rate at sometimes was 40 to 50% of our income, and we did this consistently for over a decade. If we made $10,000, we invested $5,000. If we made $8,000, we invested $4,000. And we did this month after month after month after month behind a strategy of buying underpriced assets that produced cash flow, paid me every single month, buying those at certain stages within the economy and targeting certain sectors that were under pressure but were big enough, too big to fail, you might say. Big companies that produce high income whose yield is currently yielding higher than it used to be. Why? Because this is how you get greedy when other people are fearful. That's how you do it. And it doesn't look easy and it's uncomfortable and it's buying when other people are selling. But in order to do that, you have to have a way to regulate your emotions. And the way we do that is with a strategy and a system. It's the way I do it. And I call that strategy and system, I call it the money flow. I've documented it. It's in a PDF that I'll send you if you were to ask me. It costs $25. Now you say, do I need $25? No. And if I really wanted to do this, I would buy commercials and I would promote it and I would push it through all different kind of click funnels and all that bullshit. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm rich. That's not what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is impact certain people. If I give this away to free, I'm going to get people who request this book, who have no fucking money to invest, who just waste my time asking me questions. You say, Gerald, listen, if you can't pay $25, you don't. Now, here's the funny thing. That will keep 90% of the people away. The very act of spending $25 will keep most people away. Now, the people that will, that's the kind of people I want to talk to, because the guy will spend 25 bucks, will probably have an E-Trade account, Shark Robber account. He's actually going to start doing this shit. He's not going to waste my time with just fake-ass questions that don't matter. You know how many times I get asked the question, don't you think apartment buildings are better than single-family homes? And I say, which one do you own? And they say neither. This guy's literally wasting my fucking time. He doesn't have the ability to buy either. Now, he doesn't tell me. And I say, which one are you buying? Well, I'm not buying any. So what is the point of the question? Now, I don't mind asking a random person's question, but what happens when you get 100 people a day doing that? How do you answer? The problem is you miss the legitimate question from a guy who says, hey, Gerald, I've saved up $50,000. I got to hear two choices here. I could go in on a partnership on this apartment building, or I could buy two maybe single family homes for myself. What do you think? That's a different question, right? That's a guy taking an action. That's who we're looking to talk to, right? Or at least moving in the right direction. You know how many times I've talked to people who want to get in real estate and they got a 400 credit score? It's like, dude, you got to fix that. The guru can't fix that for you. You understand that, right? Like when you say, well, what is a stock? I can't fix that for you. Like, you have to Google some shit. Some stuff you got to lay the foundation for. This is why people don't want to mentor people. A lot of times, because when you start the process, they're asking such basic questions that it's like, I can't sit here and have this conversation. You know what I mean? Like trying to have a conversation about, what do you mean stock chart? Like, I can't have that conversation. That person's got to figure that out themselves, you know? You get what I'm saying? Like, you can if it's your friend and you're just sitting over your house, but a guy who's rich and running a business and has all these things, like, he can't sit and talk to 10,000 people about the most basic of things. Like, he would have to do that through a teaching, a course, or elephant. And that's the point of a book, right? Yeah, but, you know, off my soapbox, but it surprises me so many times when I hear that. You know, and people say, well, I don't have enough money to do this, and I get to talking a little more, and they work 4 days a week. And it's like, what the fuck? No wonder you don't have any money, dude. You only work 35 hours a week. Right? I'm a multimillionaire and I work 60 to 80 hours a week. I mean, how do you think I got that way? You think I got that way working 40 hours a week, not taking any risk, not watching my stocks go up and down? This is what makes me laugh when people get all concerned. Most of the people that are getting concerned don't even have any money. They got $40,000 in there. $40,000. Now, that's a lot of money to you. Don't you understand there's people with fucking billions? We think happens when they watch that go up and down. And it's not their money. They're on the hook for other people's retirement. Say, well, yeah, they wouldn't feel as bad. Are you kidding me? You know the weight those guys must bear? Knowing they have people's retirement accounts, people's college funds. That shit wears on them. You don't think they worry about this? But you notice you never hear them talking like people talk. You know, you don't ever see rich people talking about bunkers and getting ready for, it's always poor people. You never see rich people talking about retiring. Warren Buffett ain't retired. He's doing the same fucking thing he was doing 60, 70 years ago. The only people talking about retiring is the bus driver. The bus driver, right? The real estate investor. I have a friend, he's 64 years old, bought a house yesterday. I talk to people who are 60, act like they're done. He bought a house yesterday. Think on that. He's steadily buying them. No intent in slowing down. He may not go as long every day, but he's still managing his portfolio, building his wealth like he's been doing since, you know, he was 20. And so you get to decide, where are you going to be when you're old? And so if you don't understand some of these terms, you understand you're choosing financial literacy. You're just choosing to be stupid. You understand that, right? Let that sink in. When people say, well, I don't understand much. Yeah, because you're choosing to be dumb. Because it's not complicated. You're saying it like there's an option, like you don't have to know it. This is the funny thing. People talk to me like it was fucking optional information. Like managing your own money and preparing your own retirement was some sort of thing you got to opt in for. Dude, by not doing it, you're doing it.
You're just deciding right now what it's going to be, which is nothing. You're going to have nothing because you saved nothing. You can't have time and money if you don't invest time and money. And when I say invest time, I mean fucking work. Work to get money. You can't have money if you don't invest time and money. And so when you meet the guy who's low paid, 70 years old, doesn't have enough money, guess what? You don't need to feel sorry. They chose this. People choose the path. Now that's harsh, right? But it's true. You have to wake up to this. No more. Not for you. Not for you. Hey guys, this is Gerald Peters. Thanks for listening to Science of Getting Rich podcast. If you want a copy of that book, The Money Flow, just get in touch with me, DM me. It's $25 by PayPal. I'll be happy to share it with you. If you get one little nugget, if you get one thing out of this book that you take forward, you know, how much is that worth, right? So anyway, appreciate you listening. Peace.